You're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia on the 23rd of January 2016. My name is Harrywood Fenton. Great pleasure to be with you today. Well, today we've got a two-hour show lined up for you, and we're going to be tackling one big topic for this whole two-hour show. In the second hour, I've got a frequent guest on this show coming back, Jeff McKee, an engineer and a man who's done a lot of research in a lot of different areas. And today, Jeff is going to be joining us to talk about a phenomenon in Western society which has affected him quite severely. And we'll be getting into that in a lot of detail, and we'll be documenting his actual struggle with the legal system in Australia. But it's a little hard to know how to come at this topic, because it can be approached from many different angles. And I'm going to use this overarching umbrella term, cultural Marxism, throughout this show, even though it's a term that is derided and has actually been denied any reality by many who are perceived by those who are not on the left as being left. And if that's confused you, just get ready, because you're going to be a lot more confused than that as we get into this topic. Because we're going to be talking about cultural Marxism, whether or not that indeed exists. We're going to be talking about the impact of cultural Marxism on society, and in a very, very direct way, with Jeff McKee coming on board to discuss how political correctness has indeed changed his life and completely overturned and upset his life for the past 2 years. So let me just begin with my own summary of what cultural Marxism means and how indeed it could affect an individual such as the guest we're having in the second hour to such a degree. And I'll explain what it is and what those who say it doesn't exist claim that it is not. During the 20th century, there were a number of developments out of Marxist thought from philosophers, from theorists who were heavily influenced by Marxism but were not strictly Marxist and were not particularly enamored with the doctrines of Marxism and dialectical materialism as had been kind of systematized in the Soviet Union. These philosophers are actually generally grouped under the name of the Frankfurt School. And the men involved in this loosely defined school, the Frankfurt School, had some certain things in common. I mean, they were almost all Jewish. They were also deeply interested in trying to apply a revolutionary paradigm to their own philosophical inquiries. I mean, these were people who were interested in changing the world, but they were not impressed with the way in which that was taking place in the Soviet Union. And they drew on a lot of different traditions. And one of the main components of the Frankfurt School is what is known as critical theory. And I don't have time to go into that in any depth, but let's just say it is a deep analysis of meanings and symbols within society from the point of view of critiquing what they really mean, as perhaps opposed to what they purport to mean. Now, again, a lot of this stuff is just very heady and almost meaningless, and some people find it very frustrating. The word cultural Marxism is a word that has actually been used more recently, but it is a word or a term which is denied by Marxists themselves, and there is no active group of people who would call themselves cultural Marxism. But the term does denote something, and indeed is meaningful in the sense that the school of thought out of which this terminology developed was led by people who were heavily influenced by Marxist thinking, and they were interested in influencing culture. It's just that the people who have this label foisted upon them don't like it. And this is something we're going to get into in a lot more detail. But that's enough of my kind of rambling definition. I'm going to play to you now a video from a YouTube channel by the name of Thorium, a guy who's done quite a lot of research on this and is probably far more articulate than I am on the subject. And this short video provides a number of bullet points. Of course, they're delivered in a rather bald kind of confident way that I think some of it needs to be questioned, some of it needs to be put under the magnifying glass. But it does actually make some very, very concise observations and is probably a good starting point for us to look at what this question of cultural Marxism is. And bear in mind, everything that we're talking about today is not purely theoretical, because we are in the second hour, as I said, we are going to be dealing at a very personal level with a problem, and it's not just restricted to one individual. There are many people who've fallen under this, fallen victim to what is purported to be an implementation of cultural Marxism. And we'll be looking at the direct effect on people within society in the second hour. But now I'm going to play to you the video by Thorium, and then I'll have some more comments about it afterwards. Here we go.
Let us begin with a very terse description. Cultural Marxism is a broad term which refers to the advocacy and application of critical theory, and more generally to the cultural, political, and academic influence of certain elements within the contemporary left. The roots of cultural Marxism are to be found in what is commonly known as the Frankfurt School. The term arose informally to describe the thinkers affiliated or merely associated with the Frankfurt Institute for Social Research at the Goethe University in Frankfurt, Germany during the interwar period. Critical of both capitalism and Soviet socialism, they sought to address the perceived shortcomings of classical Marxism in the pursuit of societal change. Their work came to be referred to as critical theory. Defining or categorizing critical theory is exceptionally difficult, for it pertains to a broad, almost disparate set of ideas, individuals, and approaches. The underlying and enduring aspect of critical theory, common to all its offshoots, nonetheless, is the creation of interdisciplinary theories that might serve as instruments of social transformation. During the 1960s, the Frankfurt School critical theory gained traction with some segments of the left wing and leftist thought in both Europe and North America. Today, its influence is felt throughout Western academia, dominating the social sciences and humanities, gender studies and whiteness studies being two such examples. One of the most influential critical theorists and an original member of the Frankfurt School was Herbert Marcuse. A cursory glance at any paragraph written by Marcuse will set alarm bells ringing for anyone even remotely familiar with the current culture of intolerance on college and university campuses. Consider the following passage from his 1965 essay, Repressive Tolerance. The small and powerless minorities which struggle against the force consciousness and its beneficiaries must be helped. Their continued existence is more important than the preservation of abused rights and liberties, which grant constitutional powers to those who oppress these minorities. Social justice, feminism, neo-progressivism, and post-colonialism, to name but a few, are all movements inspired by or born out of critical theory, and thus all come under the umbrella of cultural Marxism. Be it gender, sexual orientation, family, race, culture, or religion, every aspect of a person's identity is to be questioned, every norm or standard in society challenged, and ideally altered in order to benefit supposedly oppressed groups. Classical Marxism saw class conflict as occurring between the bourgeoisie and the proletariat, between the haves and the have-nots. Cultural Marxism views such a conflict as existing between the oppressed and the oppressors, between those with privilege and those without it. The working class has been replaced by minorities. Majority groups are typically defined as privileged and oppressive, with minority groups accordingly labelled underprivileged and oppressed. Heterosexuals are oppressive. Cisgender people are oppressive. Whites are oppressive, especially white men. Christians are oppressive. Those that do not fit into these groups are thus considered oppressed. It stands to reason, therefore, that if heterosexuals are oppressors, the solution is to encourage other forms of sexuality. If whites are oppressors, the solution is racial diversity. If cisgender people are oppressors, the solution is to encourage transgenderism. If Christians are oppressors, the solution is to propagate Islam. Theodore Adorno, another original member of the Frankfurt School, wrote a book entitled The Authoritarian Personality, in which he defines parenthood, pride in one's family, Christianity, adherence to traditional gender roles and attitudes towards sex, and the love of one's own country as pathological phenomena. This tendency to pathologize opinions and life patterns, which are not in accordance with its own political ends, is characteristic of cultural Marxism. Differing views are thus described as irrational fears or phobias. For example, a person who feels uncomfortable living as a minority in an area dominated by Muslim migrants may be decried as an Islamophobe, since wishing to live amongst those culturally and ethnically similar to oneself is considered sick and phobic. When Pakistani Muslims living in Britain, by contrast, show in-group preference, converting entire sections of a town or city into a mini Pakistan, there is no sickness, no phobia, only multiculturalism.
20 years ago, there were no Pakis here, no one was doing nothing. But now, the Pakis are made a stamp, man, trust, you know what I mean? That thing 20 years ahead, boy, fuck knows, man, this is going to be Pakistan. Not England, it's going to be Pakistan, man. They're all fucking shipping over.
A popular and propagandist manifestation of cultural Marxism is political correctness, in which media channels and social scientists make it a mandatory exercise to do the following. Question common language. Illegal immigrants, for example, are to be referred to as undocumented migrants, while ethnic discrimination is referred to as affirmative action. Their ambition to define and redefine words can be seen as a means of controlling the discourse and altering cultural norms.
Here with Truth News Radio, and we're just playing you a clip from a video YouTube channel, Thorium. What is cultural Marxism? And I'll just let that complete before I make a few comments. So just returning you to that video now.
Racism and sexism have been redefined as a product of prejudice plus power, which leads to such ridiculous statements as there's no such thing as sexism against men, and
I, an ethnic minority woman, cannot be racist or sexist towards white men.
Maintain an unwaveringly favourable view of groups which are marked as being oppressed. Islam is a religion of peace. Black Lives Matter is a peaceful, legitimate protest movement. Feminism is only about equality, and so forth. No deviation from the aforementioned narrative will be entertained. Ever. nor will criticism. While communism, as Marx envisioned it, offered the resolution of class conflict in a utopian social system, all that cultural Marxism offers is a desolate form of eternal warfare between ever more narrowly defined groups of offended minorities. The only meaningful consequence that its wide application could possibly ever have is the marginalization of traditional European culture.
Okay, there we have it. That was a very concise and I think really well presented little piece on this phenomenon. Now, I just want to give you my perspective on this. Thorium's presentation does not address the controversy over the even mere existence of the term cultural Marxism as a semantic construct. And that is something I want to delve into more, because what's really interesting to note is that there was a Wikipedia article titled Cultural Marxism, which was actually scrubbed from Wikipedia. And I've got a page here that links to the original Wikipedia article, and you can see that there was a time when it existed in Wikipedia. And of course, a lot of people turn to Wikipedia as a source of, you know, what is real and what is not. But what you'll find now is that the word, the term, it's been scrubbed as an article from Wikipedia, but it now links to a subsection within the Frankfurt School Wikipedia article, which is denoted as conspiracy theories. And this is something we've seen a lot in Wikipedia, where views that strongly deviate from the socially accepted norms and the versions of reality on any topic which are supported by mainstream media generally get thrown into the bucket of conspiracy theory. And there they merge with all the other conspiracy theories like aliens and chemtrails. And of course, people just roll their eyes when they see something as a conspiracy theory and are likely to ignore it. And it is fascinating, and there's another video I'm going to play to you which actually discusses the phenomenon by which this term ended up in the conspiracy theory bucket. Now, my opinion is that what we're seeing here, and what that video I just presented to you, this is a critique. Just as Marxism, in many ways, was a critique of capitalism, and just as critical theory was essentially a critique of many aspects of society, the term cultural Marxism derives from another perspective in critical thought, and it is a perspective in critical thought which is delving into a real aspect of what this school and Marxism in general has been up to in Western society for the past 100 years or so. And so I believe it has a right to exist. You may disagree with the critique. You may say it's wrong, but to completely deny it exists is just, it's not what we do when we're trying to find out the truth about anything. Now, the disciplines of critical theory, deriving as they did from men who were deeply influenced by Marxism and who were persecuted minorities themselves at a time when that persecution was the worst it had ever been. We're talking about the 1920s and 30s in Germany. It is not so surprising that these highly intellectual, quite gifted men used their intellectual rigour to develop a very advanced theory about the oppression of minorities and to think about how we might engineer a society to evolve in a direction where minorities are not persecuted in this way. And I think that's actually a noble goal. I don't think there's anything wrong with it in itself. However, what it has become is a purely impersonal, purely ideological perspective. And more than a perspective, it has become a force within society that leads to legislation, that leads to the government stepping right in and stomping on people and preventing people from doing what they otherwise would. So I'll just leave that there for the moment, because that's something we'll probably return to a bit more. But I want to play to you now another video which actually gets into this Wikipedia debacle, because I think the fact that the term was scrubbed from Wikipedia is just something we really have to keep in the forefront of our mind, because it is actually very, very important and very indicative of what is going on. It's almost the scrubbing of the word cultural Marxism from Wikipedia is cultural Marxism in action. It's a demonstration of cultural Marxism, which is quite fascinating. It's almost circular. But the action that was taken in basically memory holding the term cultural Marxism is itself an act of cultural Marxism. And this is sounding more and more Orwellian, of course, as you no doubt have already twigged. But I don't want to get into that Orwellian train of thought, because then we'll just end up talking about Orwell. I really want to stick with this. So I will play to you now the video from another YouTube channel where this very phenomenon, this what happened on Wikipedia, is being discussed.
All right, YouTube, a rather strange video here that some people here might not really care about, but others will. The topic of the cultural Marxism entry on Wikipedia and the very, very strange struggle that's going on, literally as we speak, on that subject. Essentially, what happened is that some people, apparently either Marxists themselves or I don't know exactly what you would call these people, got the bright idea that it was a good idea to essentially scrub that article and get rid of it or redirect or merge it with a conspiracy theory page. Now, the reason given, essentially, was that cultural Marxism doesn't actually exist as a school of thought, as a philosophical sort of overarching school of academics, or anything like that, and that essentially the term was simply a label given by the far right to people who were interested in social justice and other movements like that, as well as certain academic circles again. And I find this strange, because first, on the first level, it really seems a lot like sort of, you know, Stalin or one of these dictators from the past who would have people killed and then attempt to scrub all evidence that they ever existed from the world, from photographs to film reels. We have, you know, examples of pictures of Stalin standing next to people who were then his friends, and then later they mysteriously died or disappeared. Nobody knew where they went, but then they stopped existing because those pictures were magically retouched and re-released, and the originals essentially destroyed. So that's the first thing. It seems very dishonest that people would be willing to go to this. Like, that means a Wikipedia article. It's some sort of weird culture war thing going on. We'll be right back.
Hi, welcome back. You are with Truth News Radio Australia, and it is indeed a great pleasure to be with you today. And I'm working through a difficult concept in today's show, one which is fraught with social conflicts and intellectual debacles, and that is this term, cultural Marxism. And we've been just playing another video here which explains how it was originally in Wikipedia and then was removed from Wikipedia and then placed as a subsection under conspiracy theories of the Frankfurt School of Critical Theory. So I'll just actually continue with that for a bit and then I will weigh in with some of my own reflections. Here we go.
The second thing I thought of was I instantly thought about trickle-down economics. Now, this is something that is sort of the reverse of the term cultural Marxism, and this is why I think ultimately merging the article or trying to redirect it is purely biased. It's obviously politically motivated, because here you've got two examples where a claim is being made that actually the term doesn't actually apply to what it was meant to apply to, and it's primarily being used by the other side, the enemies of what becomes that label later on, to denigrate it. Because what people are saying on this article is that cultural Marxism never existed as an actual school of thought, and it was basically a term being used by the right wing. Well, trickle-down's very much the same way. You see, most of the time when people mention trickle-down economics, what they're thinking of mostly is any tax system in a real or perceived manner. It doesn't matter whether it's true or not. It's perceived as giving more of a tax break, more relief, essentially, to the rich. And it's usually been used in the past to describe Reagan's fiscal policies, as well as some of the Republican policies now. However, it's a far older term. It dates to the 40s. That's the first point. And second, people like Reagan have never actually used this term to describe their own tax plans. Essentially, the term was adopted by those on the other side, people in the Democratic Party, to denigrate what became Reagan's tax plan, to denigrate what became Bush's stimulus plan, as well as some of the fiscal plans that have been talked about in the House and Senate by the Republicans to this day. Now, those same Republican individuals would argue that this term doesn't really exist because trickle-down was never actually proposed, and the term was never actually used by the people who were proponents of those plans. However, in modern society, it's still part of our dialect. It is a commonly understood term, whether or not you agree with use of the label. It's widely understood to mean something. The same as cultural Marxism. It doesn't ultimately matter if people espousing beliefs and views that would be labeled culturally Marxist by their enemies themselves don't like or don't make use of that term. It's still understood as standing for something. It's understood as standing for a broad school within society and economics. Now, as somebody who has studied anthropology. What is anthropology? Essentially, if you're talking about cultural anthropology, it's the study of human cultures. Well, if cultural Marxism doesn't exist, then why was I, you know, studying Marx and all of these other Marxist philosophers in anthropology? Because these, again, even if you eschew the notion that the term has any real meaning, it's still studied, talked about, spoken of, and used as though it does in the wide society at large. Most people understand that the term is in use, whether or not they understand what it actually is supposed to mean. Of course, you know, most people probably don't think of such things.
Okay, I just want to pause it there because there's some very important points being made here that I just want to kind of emphasize. When he talks about anthropology and its connection to Marxism, this is a clear indication that Marxism, which was a revolutionary mode of thought, it was certainly behind the Russian Revolution, and certainly behind the Chinese Revolution, and certainly has been. It is a scientific, supposedly, view of human society, but one which presupposes transformation as inevitable. And those who follow Marxist thought see their role as being agents of moving society through those transformations. And so when Marxism becomes integral to a purely intellectual academic exercise such as the study of anthropology, then I think the word cultural Marxism becomes incredibly relevant. And this doesn't necessarily apply directly to the Frankfurt School. It applies to many different aspects of the way in which Marxism had kind of worked its way into academic disciplines, and there are a number of them. Archaeology, indeed, was heavily influenced by Marxist thought. And all of this has as its premise that society must go through certain transformations, and that Marxists will be acting as agents of those transformations. I mean, I'm kind of injecting that into this discussion now, and I'm pretty confident about what I'm saying, that is uppermost in the mind of people who actually call themselves Marxists. They're not just passively, purely theoretical Marxists. It's impossible to be thus if you absorb the theories of what the way Marx perceived human civilization evolving. You cannot be merely passive, and these views were seen as being fundamentally true, that society would evolve through a feudalistic era, through a capitalistic era, to a dictatorship of the proletariat, to the ultimate communist utopia, which is kind of like an inversion of the order. You can't simply just be on it for the ride. You know, you have to be in it because you believe in it. And I think this is the real danger, and I think the danger has been made quite clear over the past 100 years or so with societies that have veered down this path of using a theory to re-engineer society, and it leads to all kinds of excesses and all kinds of brutalities, as we know, and there's no need to go on about that in detail. But today what we're looking at is the aspect of that called cultural Marxism, you know, by the critics of it, which is kind of a soft form of transformation. It's not a violent form of transformation, but it does involve violence. It does involve coercive tactics, which can end up essentially being violent, but it's done in a kind of soft totalitarian manner. Now, I'll just return you to the video, because I think there's a few more important points there to be made, and then I will have a few more of my own reflections for you.
But the term has meaning, and to try to redirect it to a conspiracy theory page I think is rather dishonest. Now, I've had my own problems with editing on Wikipedia. I used to edit articles, and I don't anymore, because I said the idea of consensus that they've built works well in some cases. In other cases, what it ends up doing is getting these little groups and cliques together, which will hover around a certain page, making sure it doesn't get edited in any way they don't like. And then they'll jump right in. And when you try to repair it and you try to discuss the matter, they will then have 20 or 30 different people, many who have been editing other articles specifically to become recognized on Wikipedia, jump in and oppose your ideas for legitimate edits. And this has been a continual problem. I had that problem editing articles regarding Satanism. I had that problem editing articles regarding Charles Manson. Because there's a great deal, essentially what Wikipedia really depicts is a consensus view rather than a view which is all-encompassing.
And we are just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back after this very short break for one more segment in the first hour. And remember, the second hour, We've got an interview with Jeff McKee coming up, which is going to contain some very, very interesting insights. Stay tuned.
What happens in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem-reaction-solution. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying, something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it?
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And I'm going to return you to this expose on the debacle over Wikipedia and cultural Marxism, a very interesting little presentation here, and the YouTube channel, I can't actually pronounce the name, it's a rather long name on YouTube, but I will put the notes on there on our show notes so you can go and have a look at this guy as well, because it's actually quite well presented. And then I'll have a little more to say about it. I'm going to actually read to you an article from The Guardian, which takes the kind of reverse perspective, and this is the perspective that I've been hinting at throughout the show, which is to say that the people who are of the left regard the term cultural Marxism as a nutty conspiracy theory. And that's quite interesting to have a read of that as well. So just returning you to the audio clip here on the Wikipedia debacle and then a little more analysis from me.
Essentially, for some reason, they've decided that adding an entry that is legitimately sourced, properly written, as in there are no grammatical mistakes or anything, fits in, adds to the article, adds substance, adds something of meaning to it, is not always actually accepted. It's almost like they think the extra three or four lines of text that you're adding with a couple of sources is somehow going to break their servers. It makes no sense. So while this sort of consensus building and discussion idea that they have works quite well for things which are not subjected to any real scrutiny, because generally there's agreement on them, that is, that it's not going to start any sort of fight over a mere edit. For things like this, for something within the realm of politics, religion, anything fringe, definitely you have a lot of edit wars going on. It's been a continuous problem. And it doesn't seem to matter whether you're talking about a place, a person, a principle, a school of thought. And this is dishonest. There's no reason to redirect it. The article has stood for many years now.
Okay, I'll just leave it there. The author of that piece, he's making some very important points, and I've certainly discovered the same thing with Wikipedia. In topics that are divisive, topics that are highly controversial, Wikipedia becomes less and less a useful resource because of the strict consensus model. It's like if they can't find consensus on something, then it's like the meaning of that article is destroyed within Wikipedia. And the only solution that the Wikipedia editors or meta-editors seem to have come up with is to throw certain things into the conspiracy bucket, but which we know is actually a way of discrediting certain views by calling something a conspiracy theory and lumping it in with aliens and stuff. It is a great way of discrediting things. But of course, those who fall into this consensus view of things don't really see that as a problem. But anyway, we are sort of straying a little from the main topic. I'd like to actually read to you from the now non-existent Wikipedia article, and then I'll read to you from the Guardian article that I was mentioning before. Okay, so here we have the scrubbed, expunged entry from Wikipedia titled Cultural Marxism. Cultural Marxism refers to a school or offshoot of Marxism that conceives of culture as central to the legitimation of oppression, in addition to the economic factors that Karl Marx emphasized. An outgrowth of Western Marxism, especially from Antonio Gramsci and the Frankfurt School, and finding popularity in the 1960s as cultural studies. Cultural Marxism argues that what appear as traditional cultural phenomena, intrinsic to Western society. For instance, the drive for individual acquisition associated with capitalism, nationalism, the nuclear family, gender roles, race, and other forms of cultural identity are historically recent developments that help to justify and maintain hierarchy. Cultural Marxists use Marxist methods, historical research, the identification of economic interest, the study of the mutually conditioning relations between parts of a social order, to try to understand the complexity of power in contemporary society, and to make it possible to criticize what cultural Marxists propose appears natural, but is in fact ideological. Now, as the man in the previous clip was saying, this is a very well put together article. It's grammatically correct. It has meaning. It seems to describe something that really exists in our world. Yet this article was scrubbed from Wikipedia. Okay, here is now the ultimate debunking article, and this was published on The Guardian, and it's by Jason Wilson, and it's quite a recent article. It's from 2015, 19th of January 2015. The title is Cultural Marxism, a Uniting Theory for Right-Wingers Who Love to Play the Victim. The culture war that so defines current debates between the left and right sides of politics has its history in the balmy theory of cultural Marxism. What do the Australian's columnist Nick Cater, videogame hate group Gamergate, Norwegian mass shooter Anders Breivik, and random blokes on YouTube have in common? Apart from anything else, they have all invoked the spectre of cultural Marxism to account for things they disapprove of, like Islamic immigrant communities, feminism, and opposition leader Bill Shorten. That's, of course, a reference to Australia's Bill Shorten, who was, I believe, opposition leader at that time. What are they talking about? The tale varies in the telling, but the theory of cultural Marxism is integral to the fantasy life of the contemporary right. It depends on a crazy mirror history, which glancingly reflects things that really happened, only to distort them in the most bizarre ways. It begins in the 1910s and 20s, when the socialist revolution failed to materialize beyond the Soviet Union. Marxist thinkers like Antonio Gramsci and George Lukács tried to explain why. Their answer was that culture and religion blunted the proletariat's desire to revolt. And the solution was that Marxists should carry out a long march through the institutions, universities, schools, government bureaucracies, and the media, so that cultural values could be progressively changed from above. Adapting this, later thinkers of the Frankfurt School decided that the key to destroying capitalism was to mix up Marx with a bit of Freud, since workers were not only economically oppressed, but made orderly by sexual repression and other social conventions. The problem was not only capitalism as an economic system, but the family, gender hierarchies, normal sexuality, in short, the whole suite of traditional Western values. Now, what he's saying so far is actually quite reasonable, and I think so far the author of this article is only justifying why we might indeed use the term cultural Marxism, because he's referring to the same set of data that the Wikipedia article referred to, although notice when he chose to deride those who use the term, he didn't mention that it had been on Wikipedia for a long time. He only mentioned blokes on YouTube and, you know, a mass murderer as having used it. So again, you know, just keep that in your mind when you read these types of debunking articles. Okay, moving on. He says here, the conspiracy theorists, he just introduced the word conspiracy theorist there, with no reason as to why he would use that word, but he's now led with conspiracy theorists. The conspiracy theorists claim that these cultural Marxists began to use insidious forms of psychological manipulation to upend the West. Then when Nazism forced the mostly Jewish members of the Frankfurt School to move to America, they had, the story goes, a chance to undermine the culture and values that had sustained the world's most powerful capitalist nation. The whole story is transparently balmy. If humanities faculties are really geared to brainwashing students into accepting the postulates of far-left ideology, the composition of Western parliaments and presidencies and the roaring success of corporate capitalism suggests they're doing an astoundingly bad job. Anyone who takes a cool look at the last three decades of politics will think it bizarre that anyone could interpret what's happened as the triumph of an all-powerful left. Now, this is very interesting, what he's doing here, intellectually. He's basically saying because it hasn't succeeded, it doesn't exist. And his interpretation of what would be success is a little bit vague as well. He's basically just proposing that it hasn't succeeded. And he's also assuming that it would have to be insidious in a way that it's not. It's not particularly insidious. It's quite comes across. You know, those who have critiqued this cultural Marxism can see that it comes across in a very positive way. People talk about safe spaces. They talk about the need to free people who are oppressed. They talk about the persecution of minorities. These are all noble concepts. What is being done in this article here that I'm reading to you is essentially a straw man argument. There is probably a fringe of people who do take the more extreme view that there is some kind of sinister, deliberate agenda going on to upend the West. But really, most of the people who are critiquing cultural Marxism are not saying that. Anyway, that concludes part one of our show today, and I hope that's been some use to you. As we move into part two, where we're going to look at a much more practical angle on this, and we're going to see how, whether or not it exists, how one man's life has been radically affected by something along these lines. So we'll be right back in the next hour. Stay with us.